Avengers Infinity War presents an anti-hero, an anti-savior, and an anti-gospel, all in one non-stop superhero thriller. Get ready for spoilers. Are you just watching? Episode 81, Avengers Infinity War. Welcome to the podcast that shares critical thinking for the entertained Christian. I'm E. Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin.
Well, if you're tuning into this podcast, okay, the warning's going to come right out. This thing's going to contain spoilers.
We're not even going to try.
We're not even going to try to discuss this thing without the spoilers. So if you're listening and you don't want the movie spoiled, stop right now.
Yeah, please.
I can't imagine that it hasn't been spoiled for you yet, because the internet is full of spoilers right now, and
it's been out for what, 2 weeks now?
Yeah, 2 weeks at the time of we're recording this, and I'm sure by the time we get it out to you and the public, it will be much later than that.
Yeah,
so
I stopped giving spoiler warnings after a month.
Yeah. Tim and I are a little slow this month getting our thoughts together.
It's mostly me, but I appreciate you throwing yourself under the bus with me. I am the slow one here.
Yeah, well, life happens, as we were discussing earlier. Yeah. off mic. Just a couple of little things. The soundtrack in Infinity War is by Alan Silvestri, another well-accomplished composer. Music fits.
He's done a number of the other Marvel films, too, so this is all old hat for him.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the themes are recaptured and reused in this movie. I know that the Black Panther theme played a role when they switched into that. So I think they just kind of like used the themes to set you when you moved around in the movie, and that worked.
Yep.
So, I mean, we'll play a little bit of it right here for you. That sets the mood, I guess, for a discussion about Infinity War, the culmination of the MCU up to this point. I was trying to explain to people what movies they had to have seen before they went to see this, and pretty much all of them.
Yeah, it feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think you could probably have gotten away with missing the second Guardians of the Galaxy and possibly Spider-Man, though there would have been some emotional impact that would have been lost if you hadn't seen Spider-Man Homecoming.
It's definitely, you definitely would have had to have seen Black Panther. Guardians of the Galaxy 1, Doctor Strange. I think those are the three critical ones.
And Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah, Ragnarok. And, you know, there's even some Winter Soldier.
Civil War, at least.
Civil War.
Yeah.
Frankly, yeah, just go back. Use a time stone. Go back. 6 years.
Yeah, they're all
over. Or
in there.
Get a Movies Anywhere account, and you know. Yeah.
Or we could share in the show notes that video that I shared in our Facebook page that kind of gave you all the rundown you needed to know all about the Infinity Stones before you go see Infinity War.
Yeah, that was a good video.
Yeah. It's on our discussion group. If you haven't been in our Are You Just Watching discussion group on Facebook, I highly encourage you to come check it out. We're a small group. We'd like to grow. We'd like more people in there. We'd like more discussions. So if you like to talk about movies, please come and join us, because that's what we want that discussion site to be.
Yeah.
So we posted some things about an Infinity War in there even prior to recording this. So it's a good place to go talk. And it's really hard. I'm sure anybody who's gone to see this movie already has already been on Facebook discussing, because there's so much that goes on in this movie. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes. It's one of the longest of the MCU. And it used every single second of that. It did not abuse anything. It didn't spend any time in setup. It just threw you right into the action as if you had already watched all the other movies and you knew what was going on, because they didn't have a second to waste on reminding you about anything.
Yeah, there's no lead up at all in this. You're face first into it.
Yeah, you actually start at the end of Thor Ragnarok and after the teaser of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
You know, that's actually a good point. It's as everybody who's seen a Marvel movie knows, there's always either a mid-credits and an after-credits or just an after-credits scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first movie that actually depended on the after-credits scene from one of the other movies. All the other ones were just flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, and
but this one actually had a critical element to it.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, the scene that was at the end of Doctor Strange reappeared in the movie Thor Ragnarok. They actually replayed that scene in the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's actually the teaser scenes. I've only seen Ragnarok once, but I think it's actually the teaser scene from Ragnarok that is the lead-in. It's when the ship is flying through space.
Right.
But yeah, it was the teaser of when the ship that's carrying all the refugees from Asgard is stopped by the bigger ship. And that's where you're leading into Infinity War. And then I think the teaser, and once again, I've only seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 once. Well, maybe I have seen it twice now that I think about it. I saw it when it was on Netflix.
Yeah, it's still on Netflix.
It's still on Netflix, yeah.
Or as of this recording, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
The big ship that they come up with against is the Sanctuary 2.
Yeah. And then they have the scene where the Guardians hear the distress signal and they head towards it. So those two scenes are the lead in towards the beginning of Infinity War. So with all that set up, they really start. I mean, most people thought going into this movie, a lot of characters were going to die. And it's very interesting because the speculation going was that it was going to be all of the older Avengers to make room for the younger Avengers. And I like to tell people at work that what the Infinity War creators did was they round tabled it, what everybody expected to happen in the movie. And then they set that aside and did something else.
Yep. Yeah, they're going in with a comic book series already written that they're sort of following.
Right.
But they had to mix it up, and I made predictions in the Facebook page, as a matter of fact. I predicted who I thought was going to die, and neither one of them did.
Yep. And I was smirking the whole time everybody was making those predictions because I'd already seen the movie. I went to a press preview, so I saw it long before a lot of people did. And it was kind of interesting because the girl that I went to see the press preview with, the whole ride up to the theater, it was about a 30-40 minute drive to the theater we had to go to. And we were discussing what we thought was going to happen and who we thought was going to die. And the discussion coming back from the theater was the fact that all the people we thought were going to die were still alive at the end. And speculation as to how they were going to manage sequels to about half the movies they have planned when the characters no longer exist.
Yeah. I had read an article after I saw the movie about when they wrote Infinity War, it was before Black Panther came out. They claimed they had no idea how big Black Panther was going to be. I don't believe that for a second. And Homecoming was already out, and they had already announced Spider-Man sequel. So we know that the death toll is not going to stay the same.
Right. Something's got to change. Something big is going to change. And we can discuss that at length. The thing is that a lot of the speculation is already out there, so I don't know that we're sharing anything new by speculating about what we think is going to happen in the sequel. I do know that the sequel was unnamed because they did not want to spoil Infinity War, and the name for the new movie was going to spoil the end of Infinity War, and so they haven't named it yet, at least publicly. I'm sure it has a name, they just haven't publicly given
Did you see they actually released their upcoming movie slate? And they released every single one of them with generic names. Marvel movie, Marvel movie, Marvel movie. They're really taking it to heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can understand that, you know, there's a lot of expectation riding on this. They can't give much away. And the fact that the next two movies that are coming out, Ant-Man and Wasp in July, is either concurrent or before Infinity War. And Captain Marvel next March is a Origins movie.
Right, which I thought they weren't going to do anymore. I found that interesting.
No, and
they're bringing back Phil Coulson.
Well, it's a, you know, a Captain America style Origins where you go back in time. So it happens.
Takes place
in the
90s. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting, and you know the teaser in this in Infinity War did set up the Captain Marvel movie, sorta.
Yep.
It was very subtle setup, and for those of us who have never even heard of Captain Marvel, we had to have it explained to us.
Yep. And not think it's the guy who says Shazam.
I guess my education in the Marvel Universe was lacking because I had to have somebody explain to me what that symbol meant. But yeah, we'll get to see the origin, and I guess when we go to see Ant-Man and Wasp, we'll find out what happened to Scott maybe at the end of Infinity War, because he's not actually in Infinity War.
Yeah, I am curious, at the end of Ant-Man and Wasp, will they have people, will they catch up to the timeline and fade away? My wife and I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they've actually made reference to the events in New York, but nobody's faded away yet. And there's like two episodes left in the season. So they may
work with it. I don't know. But they have to
Or
wait.
They may not even tie it in at all.
They may not.
There's rumor that they're you know, separating off.
Well, it kind of makes sense because if they're going to do another season next year, their season will be approaching its end before the sequel to Infinity War. So they have to they have to fit in a whole other year in there somewhere. The other interesting thing is how the Netflix Marvel properties will tie in, because we have at least two, possibly three more series being released.
Yeah, probably Luke Cage is coming out soon.
And I think there's
I wish they'd get to another Daredevil soon, too.
Yeah, well, Daredevil...
Oh, Jessica Jones has already been announced, too.
Well, Jessica Jones is already out. Season two is, anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I watched it.
You can't even remember.
Daredevil, it's all running together.
Yeah, Daredevil season three has already been filmed and is in post-production.
Oh, that's right. I remember you putting up a picture of...
Mm-hmm. The only way I can think of is my philosophy on that is that the Netflix properties are behind the time of the movies. I really feel like they're not up to the same time frame as the movies are. And I could be wrong on that, but that's what they feel like they're behind.
Well, so much time has passed since the original Avengers movie, but it sure doesn't feel like that much time has passed in the Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones area.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling. I don't feel like they are tracking time as quickly. And especially when Spider-Man Homecoming came out and gave the time frame of how long it's been since the... You know, the Battle of New York or whatever it is they call it. Yeah, I really feel like at least the first season of Daredevil was set way before that. So, and Daredevil's tracking about 1 year per season. So I don't know how they could possibly have all that much time in there.
Yeah. Hey, we've gotten a little bit off track. We should probably jump into what we did and didn't like before we start talking.
Daredevil?
The themes of Infinity War.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like the movie.
I do want to say Daredevil is my favorite Marvel character still.
Still.
But that's because he's a strong faith Catholic.
Yeah. And there's some weird faith things that go on in this movie that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I did like about Infinity War was the shock ending. I like the fact that... Yeah. They kept us guessing. No matter how much we anticipated what was going to happen in the movie, it surprised us. I think a lot of people were hurt by that surprise. I saw a lot of people basically swearing off the MCU on Facebook because they were so mad.
Oh, come on.
There was one lady I saw posting in one of the forums I'm in that basically said that she couldn't even watch the older movies. It had ruined everything for her. She was never going to watch another MCU movie. I think that's a little bit drastic.
Yeah, just a little bit. Agree.
But I think the humor was, it kind of reminded me of Ragnarok in that it's such a dark movie, and yet they keep it upbeat by throwing in sometimes very unnecessary humor.
Yeah.
But that's just the MCU, so you kind of get used to it.
Yeah, you feel like they had a comedian there just throwing lines in here and there, like when Thor was brought aboard the Guardian ship.
Well, the Guardians, of their whole genre is space humor. Comedy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So trying to put them into a more serious MCU setting is difficult. And
yep.
I feel like they were there almost as the comic relief. Except Gamora had a very serious story going on, so I don't know.
Yeah. It, speaking of dark, this movie has a huge cast. Mm-hmm. Of all people who are used to being the star of their own movie.
Mm-hmm.
And some really big names at that, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, you know, all of them.
Uh-huh.
And the writers.
Lots of Chris's,
and
actually.
The directors. Oh, yeah. I think they did a really good job fitting them all together without making it feel overly cramped.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like everybody got a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, and giving them concurrent stories so that you didn't actually have them all grouped together.
And one other thing that I particularly liked about this movie, maybe more than anything else, was I liked how sympathetic they made Thanos. They really made him... He is still absolutely the Mad Titan.
Yeah.
But you understand where he's coming from. In the comic series that this is based on, he still, you know, snaps his finger and eliminates half the life of the universe.
Right.
But he does it to impress Lady Death. I mean, it's a really weak, really weak reasoning.
Yeah.
And in the movie, I feel that not only did the writers make it so that you could sort of feel where he's coming from, but Josh Brolin really put that emotion into his performance. And I really liked how they did that with this one.
Well, I really felt like this movie was Thanos' story. I mean, they could have just as easily called this, you know, the age, you know, some kind of naming it after Thanos, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of making it the Avengers movie, because he's the hero. And the fact
that... The balance of Thanos.
I mean, the thing is that it ends with him reaching his goal. He gets all the stones and he restores balance to the universe according to his desires, his will.
Yeah.
And then he sits down and watches the sunset. So it's his story, and he did exactly what he was wanting to do, and so it's his story. That's what the movie is, and I could see why some people were upset by that. They were seeing Thanos as the villain who must be defeated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, movies that have sequels typically do end dark. If you could throw yourself back to the early 80s when Empire Strikes Back came out, it was tragedy. You know,
yeah.
It ended in such a dark way. And you're like, how can they possibly get over this? You know?
Yeah. I don't even see this Avengers 3 and Avengers 4. I don't even see them as sequels.
Mm-hmm.
I see them as a two-part movie,
mm-hmm.
which is how it was originally pitched, but...
Can you imagine? It was already almost 3 hours long. Can you imagine the second half?
At the end of Avengers Infinity War, we are halfway through the movie, and I think people need to remember that.
Yeah.
So we're halfway through the hero's journey here. It ain't over till the fat lady sings, and she ain't singing yet.
Yeah. Well, she vanished into dust.
Oh, yeah. She couldn't sing. She doesn't feel too good.
Yeah, I don't feel so good.
But you're right. The entire movie and much of what we have to discuss is about Thanos and his entire worldview.
Mm-hmm.
His logic and his quest to get the Infinity Stones and the logic he's using to justify his actions really are what the movie's all about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole restoring balance. And I like that the flashbacks they gave you, like to Gamora's childhood when she's taken in by Thanos, and you see just the supposed, I don't know, the randomness of how he would just go to planets and just like divide people randomly and then shoot half of them.
Yeah.
And you'd kind of been told about that in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. I think it was such a side story that it didn't mm-hmm. really impact your thinking as much as actually seeing it pictured the way they did in Infinity War. Just how ruthless that was.
Yeah, it's because the villain of Guardians 1 was the Kree guy with the hammer. I can't remember his name. And the mentions of Thanos, even that last mention at the end where Drax says Thanos is the real enemy,
mm-hmm.
even that all felt sort of forced to me. But, you know, I let it slide because I knew by that point that Thanos was the big enemy. He had one of the teasers at the end of Avengers, right? Mm-hmm. It showed him turning to face the camera and the big dun-dun-dun yeah. moment.
Yeah, I think he was in several of the teasers. But
yeah.
The thing was is that they were introducing characters that had all been affected by his one-man crusade to wipe out half the universe. Interesting aside on that is one of the videos that we'll put in the show notes is the screenwriter's pitch. And one of the things he pointed out in that was that all life would not be just intelligent life. It would be plants and animals. So does that mean that, you know, if there's only like one guy on a planet, you know, you think too deep.
I read an article written by a mathematician that talks about just this kind of,
yeah.
It seems to me that not only is he a mathematician, but he's also an insurance actuary because he got a little dry, but it was a fascinating article. There's a short dialogue from the movie that really lays out Thanos' motivation, and I thought we might try something interesting. you want to read parts?
Sure, why not?
You want to be Doctor Strange or Thanos?
Oh, I'll be Strange. I'm okay. Always Strange.
Right. So I will be Thanos. Are you ready?
Sure.
When we faced extinction, I offered a solution.
Genocide?
But random. Dispassion is fair for rich and poor alike. They called me a madman. What I predict came unannounced.
Congratulations, you're a prophet.
I'm a survivor.
Who wants to murder trillions?
With all the six stones, I can simply snap my fingers and they will cease to exist. I call that mercy.
Then what?
Finally, rest. Watch the sunrise on an ungrateful universe. The hardest choices require the strongest will. So Thanos is like, he is convinced. He's a zealot in his own right,
mm-hmm.
chasing this idea of preventing the universe from having too many living beings.
The destruction of resources. Yeah. And, you know, from a certain perspective, that can seem like he says, mercy. Because I remember a time speaking as stewards, there was an instance in the South where the white-tailed deer became vastly overpopulated because we had taken away all their natural predators.
Yep.
And they were becoming very sickly and they were having herd problems because, you know, the lack of predators to take out the weak, and they were reproducing at a horrible rate. And so they had to do open season and tell everybody to go mm-hmm. kill as many deer as possible to try and thin the herds down.
Yeah.
And it seems so cruel. But in the long run, we were doing it for the benefit of the white-tailed deer because they needed culling in order to yeah. survive. And they were becoming diseased. And so there's a perspective on that of, you know, guarding your resources and doing the proper stewardship of, you know, where that could actually make sense.
Yep.
And it's really hard because when it's presented that way, you're like, oh, but it sort of makes sense. But at the same time, as Doctor Strange so, you know, succinctly put, is genocide. And you don't do that kind of thing. And I guess it's one thing when you do it for the dumb beasts, and it's another when you do it to sentient creatures who should be able to be making proper decisions in their own stewardship of their resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I was stationed at Fort Polk back in the early 90s, and as part of the base realignment and closure of the Clinton administration, Polk was downsized from like 35,000 troops to around 3,000, and now it's a special training facility for joint readiness. But one of the impacts of that downsizing was that there is now a herd of wild horses that has taken over the what used to be, you know, area that they would do maneuvers in around Fort Polk. And it was getting very bad, just like your white-tailed deer. And the government issued essentially a kill order for a certain number of the horses to prevent catastrophe for the entire herd.
So they all starved to death because they're in enough, you know.
And an environmental group filed suit and stopped it. So it's, you know, this is really just a situation of, I hate to go back to one of the staples of our
podcast,
of our, yeah, of our worldview podcast here, but it's one of, it's another instance of idolatry, putting creation over creator. We're called to be stewards of our environment, but we're not supposed to put the environment over
humanity.
Yeah. Over God's image.
And there's also the understanding that God is sovereign and he's got a plan in all of this, which is what's sorely lacking, obviously, from Infinity War, because everybody's God and nobody's the ultimate God in this in this movie. There's a lot of gods, little g's, running around, but there's no ultimate authority that anybody is leaning on. And that is, you know, what a godless worldview looks like. You know, you're just all struggling around on your own subjective understanding of what's right instead of having an absolute standard for what's right.
Yeah.
And that's where the whole thing falls apart, because if Thanos believes what's right is, you know, reducing the impact on the resources so that there's enough to go around, how do you combat that? You know, that's his reasoning. How, you know, what is the argument against that? If there's no ultimate authority to turn to.
Yeah, exactly. And it sure doesn't seem like, let's just say for a moment, that the Marvel Cinematic Universe was real. It doesn't seem like God would allow all this to happen. But even as powerful as the beings in this movie are, they are still nothing
compared to our God. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, the God of Job and the God of Isaiah is beyond description further than Thor or Thanos.
Or Loki.
Or Loki.
Well, the God who dies at the beginning of Infinity War.
And, you know, I was struck by how Thanos is talking throughout the movie about seeking balance. And balance is a philosophy that is an antithesis to reality, because it, you've got physicists talking about entropy and how everything trends towards falling apart. But
the laws of thermodynamics.
Yeah, exactly. As Christians, we know that even as the physical realm may trend towards empathy, we know that the victory is already won.
Yeah. Well, and actually, entropy fits perfectly well into a Christian worldview, because it's the result of sin. You know, that's where sin comes into it. It's the cog in the perfect plan that God created, and he allowed it. And it's not that it's out of his control. He simply allowed it, because there had to be consequences for disobedience. And so, you know, he just removed just a slight iota of his maintaining power from the universe so that it would become entropic. The idea of perfect balance is, I wouldn't say it's anti-biblical. I would just say that it doesn't work with the concept of sin.
Yeah.
But it is an ancient philosophy. And I know we've addressed this before in some of the movies that had a more Asian tilt and more New Age or mythical kind of feel. the ancient Chinese philosophy of yin yang is completely based on the universal balance of equal opposites. But what's always fascinated me about that is that the way they describe equal opposites is like light is the absence of dark and dark is the absence of light. But that's actually not true, because light is a presence. Dark is its absence.
Right.
And wet is a presence and dry is its absence. And so good is God and bad is the absence of God.
Yeah. And if I'm not in a room, the room is not my lack of presence in a room is not a presence in and of itself.
Right. Right. And so I think that in some ways the whole idea of universal balance doesn't work even with equal opposites, because one is the absence of the other and they're not equal. One is the absence of one.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually are not equal. And so that balance is impossible. Because there is either God or there's not God.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it's an interesting philosophy. And, you know, there's an interesting parallel going on in, I saw it pointed out in one of the forums that I was in. I think they kind of articulated what I was kind of already sensing in the movie. But they did, like, they were pointing out that at the end of the movie, some were chosen, some were not. Which is kind of, you know, kind of implies a little bit of like what's going on in the end judgment in Revelation,
yep.
Regardless of where you put your eschatological beliefs. There is a godlike figure who sacrifices his child in order to accomplish his work of salvation, which is really hard when that godlike person is actually the villain.
Yeah.
His cronies, the people that hang out with him, they do a lot of prophesying, and they do it just in very much in the vein of Old Testament prophets, you know, preaching the will of Thanos on a people that are facing judgment. And so it's very Old Testament feel to it. And then before he accomplishes his plan of salvation, he's very much a vengeful nature. Thanos very much appears like some people view the Old Testament God. And I would say as a Christian that there is no difference between God in the Old Testament and God in the New Testament. But people looking out at the Bible as a whole outside of an understanding given by the Holy Spirit often see the Old Testament God as being very vengeful and mean. They don't see any love and compassion in his actions in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And that's the way, you know, Thanos very much appears.
Yeah, Thanos is the gospel without the good news.
Right. And then getting the stones is kind of like his once and for all solution for plan of salvation. So just like with Jesus's act on the cross, it's like a once for all. It's not something that has to keep happening. It was when Thanos got the stones, that was it. You know, snap of the fingers and he's accomplished salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pointed out that if you view the Bible from the perspective of the Gnostics, it's very similar to this movie, and that the Avengers are the heroes because they're fighting God.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when you see that, it's this like anti-gospel, like this, it's like the whole concept, the whole story of the Bible turned on end, where God is the bad guy. And the act of salvation is against the moral accountability of the universe.
Yeah, but Paul tells us that apart from the saving grace of Christ, we are the enemies.
Right.
So those who are not saved, God is the enemy to them.
Mm-hmm.
And God is their Thanos.
And you know, the very interesting thing about that is that as atheists out there who purportedly do not believe in God, spend an awful lot of time and energy fighting against God. Against the concept of God. And it never ceases to amaze me. If you spend any amount of time in open Christian Facebook forums or any other forums on the internet, you know, they'll post a Christian article and it doesn't take more than an hour before the atheists have showed up, you know, starting to call people names and make, you know, snide comments and stuff. And I honestly don't feel like Christians do that a lot to atheist sites, because we have better things to do with our lives than go fight something we don't believe in.
And, you know, unfortunately, when Christians do respond in kind, because it, let's face it, when people get in your face and start calling you names, it's easy to slip into the, yeah, well, so's your mama.
Yeah. Some very unchristian-like behavior occurs.
Exactly. And when Christians do that, it
doesn't help.
We have a witness yeah. that we're harming on top of all that.
Right.
So it does double damage.
Right. But at the same time, as I point out, I can't imagine there's very many of us that go purposely to hang out in atheist groups.
No.
To target their belief systems.
And, oh, man, I would go crazy.
Yeah. And the whole point is that there
I have enough trouble in Christian groups.
Well, there's these militant atheists that seems to be all they don't have lives. All they do is hang out at Christian sites to mock the Christians. And it's like, why? If you don't believe in God, why does it even matter to you? What?
Well, not all atheists are trolls. No. So.
I agree. I completely agree.
I suspect a lot of trolls are atheists, but not all atheists are trolls.
But that's kind of the issue is that in this movie, you see them fighting God in the form of Thanos and he yeah. wins. And so it is very much an anti-gospel. I don't really know what to do with that from a Christian standpoint, other than to say, this is the way non-believers probably look at God.
Yeah.
And we can look at that and go and understand why they have that philosophy that, I mean, take the account of Noah's flood into our, you know, thought life here. Mm-hmm. You know, God comes and he says, the whole world is wicked. I'm going to save 8 people and everybody else is going to die.
Mm.
That does look like a very vengeful and
oh yeah, it's
uncompassionate thing to do. And
the one that always gets to me is when the Israelites have come back, have come into the promised land,
and they wipe everybody.
On more than one occasion, their instructions are kill every man, woman, and child,
and the livestock and everything. Yeah,
yeah, and I've said it before. I'll say it again. If I were a soldier back then, I'd have had some real trouble with that. Mm-hmm. But it takes a huge amount of faith. There is sort of a different reflection that we can draw from this, though. And the Avengers know when they're fighting that Thanos intends to kill off half of all life.
Mm-hmm.
And they are fighting with all of their strength. And there's no one-upmanship. They are all working together. It is all teamwork. It's all synchronicity. And they are fighting their hardest to prevent Thanos's action. And you can sort of look at that as we should be looking at the final coming. It's when Christ comes again.
Mm-hmm. That's our victory.
But there are going to, every unbeliever is going to perish.
Right. And we shouldn't.
And we should be
fighting for them. Yeah.
We should be pulling out our Black Panthers and our Captain America. We should be getting that guy a shield.
Yeah.
And we should be doing everything we can to fight for them.
Yeah.
And lead them to the saving grace of Christ.
And, you know, it's interesting because I think I've mentioned this in several other episodes about a conversation, an ongoing correspondence that I've had with an atheist who reached out to me and listened to our podcast and is really intrigued and wanting to know, I guess, understand our point of view. And I appreciate that in her. She's very open. And, you know, the more I talk to her attitude was, why can't you just let us be and, you know, believe what we want to believe? And why is it necessary for you to continually proselytize and try to, you know, convert people? And I tried to explain to her the whole concept of, if you know people are heading for a cliff and they're going to perish, wouldn't you do everything you could possibly do to stop them from going over that cliff and perishing?
Yeah.
How can you call that hate? That's love. That's compassion. That's wanting somebody not to perish. And that should be our position. I mean, that's what motivates us to never give up on those we know aren't saved, because we want them to not perish. We want them to live forever with us.
I always thought of it as sort of like a sleeping and burning house.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to let them sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. They may burn to death, but it's going to be because they resisted us dragging them out of the house.
Yeah. Not for lack of trying.
Not for lack of trying. And they could hate us for that, but that's our motivation. It's like we understand what the eternal cost is, and they can decide there isn't an eternal cost, but that doesn't mean it isn't there. I guess that's one of the biggest reminders we can take from this movie, is that there is a concerted effort, that even in the end, when so many are lost, you know they're not going to stop trying.
Yeah. You know what? We need to keep doing it, though, mm-hmm. because Matthew 10:22, you will be hated by everyone because of my name.
Mm-hmm.
But the one who endures to the end will be saved. I would rather be hated for waking somebody up.
And even
live with not doing.
Yeah,
so.
Even in the account of Noah and the flood, I really think that Noah was, I mean, in Hebrews, they refer to Noah as a preacher of righteousness. I don't think that he went into that boat and God closed the door without spending every last breath he had trying to encourage people to come with them. I really feel like God chose the 8 people that were saved because they were the only 8 people who could be saved, because the sin was just so horrible in the world. Nobody was listening to Noah. He was trying to warn them and they didn't listen. And it says in the New Testament, it tells us that as in the days of Noah, so will it be in the end times, that people will not be listening. They will not be hearing the good news. They will turn a blind eye to God, and they will suffer the judgment because they refuse. They refuse salvation.
Despite all the signs and portents to the contrary, I'm not at all versed in end times eschatology, but I am sure that nobody will be going blind into the end times. Everybody will have had a chance to see God as he is.
I had a pastor once that preached on hell and the final judgment, not necessarily from an eschatological viewpoint, like when it's going to happen or anything like that. But it's very obvious from scripture when you do a study of it, that even those who are unsaved, who face judgment and eternity in the lake of fire, eternal suffering, they will be praising God because they will know that he was righteous in his judgment. And that's a hard concept to wrap your mind around, that as even those who reject him in this life, in eternity, they will understand that his punishment is just. And that's a hard concept. But like you, I try not to take a firm eschatological stance. But can you not admit that there was definite rapture visuals in this movie?
Definitely.
The second time that I watched it, I was watching it with a different group of people, and the girl that was sitting next to me in that scene where everybody's going to dust, she's like, "The rapture," and I'm like, "Well, yeah, it is sort of a rapture, isn't it?"
Yeah, it's like an anti-rapture though, mm-hmm. because
the chosen
I don't know if this was part of the movie or not, but in the storyline, it wasn't that they died. It was that they ceased to exist. Right. And,
but yet they all felt ill heading up to, you know, I don't feel so well. And then they felt it coming, sadly enough. That's where the buildup to... was supposed
they killed off the kid.
Yeah, they took Spider-Man, and he's like pleading, and had his arms around, you know, Stark, pleading, "I don't want to. I don't want to go.
Take Stark. He's a jerk."
Oh, we'll see Spider-Man again.
Yep. I certainly hope so.
Well, I think...
One video I saw suggested maybe the next Spider-Man movie is actually going to be Ned putting on the Spider-Man suit.
Well, I guess there have been other Spider-Mans, so I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be... I am sure it will be Tom Holland in the suit.
Oh, I just love that line he said when he stowed away. He made the comment. He's like, "I can't be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man if there isn't a neighborhood." And then he's like, "I'm sorry, that didn't make any sense." And I'm like, "Yeah, actually, it did make sense.
It makes sense to me."
Oh, I love Spider-Man. I've liked all of the different versions of Spider-Man. So do we want to deal very quickly with some of our theories? Since we've discussed about the dusting and how everybody vanished at the end of the movie, I have some theories. I don't know whether they are the same as your theories.
You take the lead.
Okay. So my theory is we might see Gamora again. I think she's actually, her soul is trapped in the Soul Stone, and so it can be traded for. So I think she has a chance of coming back. I believe everyone dusted at the end is an altered reality due to the Reality Stone and Thanos' will being imposed on the Reality Stone. So if you can get the Reality Stone away from Thanos, then reality will reassert itself. And the reason why I say that is because when the Guardians are fighting Thanos on Nowhere, he changes a couple of them. He alters the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he leaves, they go back to normal. Remember that?
I remember when Drax and Mantis were made into Slinkies.
Well, Slinky and a crumbled rock.
Yeah.
Drax was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Drax was the rock. And I remember thinking, wow, that was really harsh. And then I was a little disappointed when they when they reformed. I was like, I expected it to be a little more permanent.
Yeah, but it wasn't. As soon as he left and took his will away, they reasserted themselves. So,
well, that was the effect of the Reality Stone, though, right?
Yeah.
So
I know that it's all six stones together that gave him the ability to wipe everybody out, but I think he altered reality through time and space and hid the souls. So I think they're all working together, but I don't think any of it, it's all his imposed will. And so if you get the stones away from him, his will is no longer imposed on this altered reality, and reality, the real reality, will reassert itself.
I don't know. It seems like they, from a storytelling standpoint, they can't just undo all the fadeaway deaths that they had. I think some of them have to stay dead. We know that Tom Holland is going to come back. We know that the business behind Marvel Disney would not allow Black Panther to not return.
This is my theory, is that we know that there is going to be sacrifices in the second movie. So here's my theory is that reality will reassert itself. And the people who have died will come back. But in order to make that reality reassert itself, the ones that are left at the end of Infinity War have to sacrifice their lives to get the gauntlet away from Thanos.
So it's people will come back, but not all of them will stay alive.
Or it'll be a trade-off. Or it'll be a trade-off. The old ones will go, the new ones will come back.
Yeah, the ones with contracts that have expired are going to go.
Right. So Captain America and Thor and Tony Stark and you know, all of the ones that are left at the end will at least, some of them will sacrifice their lives in order to get the gauntlet away from Thanos. And when they get the gauntlet away from Thanos, reality will reassert itself, and the half of the people that disappeared because of his will being put on the stones to make half the universe disappear will come back because reality will fix itself.
Do you think that they'll put the stone back on Vision and Vision will come back?
Now, the Vision's another matter. I don't know whether it's possible to bring him back.
It's the same thing with Loki for me,
I don't know that Loki will come back. The only reason why I think Gamora has a chance is because she was exchanged for the Soul Stone. So I think she is in the Soul Stone. So theoretically, somebody could trade with her and she could come out. That's my theory, anyway.
In the comic books, Vision is a long time. I mean, he has his own. He has multiple of his own series.
Right.
So it seems like eliminating him as a revenue stream is not the best business choice.
Well, next year,
and Paul Bettany is such a good actor too.
Next year we'll come around and we'll see how many of my theories are correct. But
yep,
that's my theory. And of course, then the other one is really obvious, and everybody's already been talking about the fact that Doctor Strange's comment about the, you know, what 14 million possible futures and only one of them they win, and then he just gives up the Time Stone, even though he'd said earlier on that that he, if it came to Stark and the boy's life versus losing the stone, he would protect the stone. And then he turns around and gives the stone up to protect Stark's life. So you knew there was something going on there. And
so wait a minute, all of reality is saved by the old saying, if you love something, you gotta let it go. All of reality is saved by a 1970s love song? That's a little disturbing.
And that's actually one of the flaws in the movie. Because he's supposed to give up something the thing he loves the most in order to get the Soul Stone. So he kills Gamora. And as Gamora succinctly puts, this isn't love, you know?
You know, I think that he does love Gamora, though.
Yeah,
I think
but he
it's
doesn't
a twisted
love
version of love.
He doesn't love her more than he loves
his destiny,
his concept of what he's supposed to do with the stones.
I ignored my destiny once. I cannot do that again, even for you. I'm sorry, Gamora.
Uh-huh.
That's so... He doesn't love her as much as he loves his destiny, but... you know, I got the sense that it wasn't his destiny, but the concept that he was the only one who could bring this mythical balance to the universe.
He's the only one with the strong enough will.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that whole concept that it takes a strong will, I kind of understand what he's saying. Is like, it's not an easy task. What he's doing is hard. And he's giving up things. In fact, there was a quote.
I know what it's like to lose, to feel so desperately that you're right,
yeah.
Yet to fail nonetheless. It's frightening, turns the legs to jelly. I ask you, to what end? Dread it, run from it, destiny arrives all the same, and now it's here. Or should I say, I am. You know, I don't actually remember that quote from the movie.
I don't either.
When would he have said
maybe
that?
Maybe it was in the trailer. They did a lot of stuff in the trailer that actually wasn't in the movie.
They seem to be doing that more and more over the last 10 years or so, yeah. Putting stuff in the trailer that isn't included in the final cut.
Or even altering the scenes. So anyway, back to my Doctor Strange comment about that he's playing towards a particular one future that he knows where they'll win. And so he makes his decisions based on what will bring about the ending in which they win, and that appears to be that Thanos has to get the stones for that win to occur. And
yeah.
And so that's the screenwriter thing that we're going to share kind of plays off of that a little bit. You know, that's their failsafe when everybody goes, but why did they do this? Or why did they do that? We just say, because Doctor Strange saw the one future where they would win. That's kind of their deus ex machina that fixes everything.
It's her excuse to cover all their mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's because Doctor Strange saw it that way. But yeah, it's not even just a theory. That's the way they built the movie, was so that, that you could come out going, well, that's the way Doctor Strange saw it. So they had to let Thanos win. That was their only way
course,
to victory.
It's vague enough that we can't possibly draw any solid conclusions.
Yeah.
So we're stuck waiting until April of next year or May of next year to figure out exactly what he meant. And even then we may not find out exactly what he meant.
Well, and you know, the weird thing is that they're actually throwing their own thing back, because in Doctor Strange, the Ancient One is talking to Doctor Strange in the movie Doctor Strange. She says that she cannot see past her own death.
Mm-hmm.
So if Doctor...
I didn't catch that. Nice catch.
So if Doctor Strange can't see past his own death, and yet he saw the one future in which they could win, is the one where he fades away into dust. That doesn't make any sense.
So we know Benedict Cumberbatch is back. Or either that, or they have a
big hole.
Pretty serious continuity hole, yeah.
Which is not unheard of. I mean, they're not perfect. They can't think of everything.
Yeah. I saw a discussion on, you know, the whole idea in the Marvel Cinematic Universe of gods and Thor and Loki and Odin all being gods. And somebody pointed out that in the first Thor movie, Thor actually sitting around the campfire with... Natalie Portman's character, I can't remember her name, goes into that whole Carl Sagan thing of what you call magic is just science.
A higher
it's one and the same thing. Yeah.
That you haven't discovered yet.
And in the first movie,
They went to a lot of trouble to say
he
wasn't a god.
They don't call themselves gods. Yeah, exactly. He goes out of the way to say that he's not a god. But in the second movie and the third movie, they actually refer to themselves as gods. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're embracing their role in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But in Avengers, Loki goes, "I have an army." And Stark says, "Well, we have a Hulk." And the Hulk proceeds to beat the living crap out of Loki. Mm-hmm. And then in this movie, there's a mirror of that where Loki says to Thanos, "Well, we have a Hulk." Mm-hmm. And then
Thanos proceeds to beat the Hulk.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have different levels of power. And really, all it is if you're powerful enough, you're perceived as a god. Mm-hmm. But none of them are God.
Right.
None of them are gods.
And the fact that they can die is the number one thing. I mean, of course, Christ could die, but he rose again. And it wasn't a permanent death. And then they bring up the whole concept of resurrection with Loki because he keeps tricking his death and not actually mm-hmm. dying. And in this movie, he really looks really dead. So
yeah, and Thanos says no resurrection for you this time.
Right.
You know, I got to say, Loki's death was a little cheapened by the fact that we go into this break between the movies knowing that that at least some of the deaths are not going to be permanent.
Yeah.
So not knowing if Loki is permanently dead.
He sure looked.
Which would be.
They would have to.
He really did look. Him and Vision, I think, are two deaths that can't really be undone.
And the guy that would open the.
Heimdall. Yeah.
The other thing about Loki that was kind of cheapened was that he's the god of tricks, and his last trick was pulling a dagger on Thanos. I mean, that was like...
Yeah, it was sort of weak, wasn't it?
It was like, you could come up with something better than that. It's like, you could literally pull the Tesseract out of air, but you can't better hide a dagger.
It seems like you could have come up with something better being the trickster god.
Anyway... There was an interesting article that I saw shared about the concept of Thor versus the Hulk, who would be, if they went up against each other, who would win. And the actual creator of the comics came forward and said that Thor would win against the Hulk.
Yeah.
So the fact that Hulk lost to Thanos. Now, the interesting thing, I heard somebody mention it the first showing, with the way that Thanos and the Hulk went together. That the Hulk is used to just brutal strength. He doesn't have, he doesn't know how to fight. He just uses his brutal strength against everything. Thanos has brutal strength and an actual style of fighting. So,
yeah,
the Hulk was bested by somebody who actually knew how to fight and could match him strength for strength. And so the Hulk needs to learn how to fight.
Yeah, he didn't. The Hulk didn't lose by not being stronger, even though he wasn't.
Right.
He lost because that was all he brought to the party.
Right.
Was his strength and a rudimentary understanding of tactics.
Which is why he wouldn't come out for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He was a little.
Yeah.
He's not used to losing, so.
Yeah, seeing the Hulk as a whipped puppy really. I couldn't have planned that. So seeing him that way really was pretty powerful. The hero or anti-hero or however you want to look at mm-hmm. the Hulk, the one who could just beat Loki to a pulp, is so scared that he won't even come out anymore.
Like, beauty god.
Yeah.
This is interesting. You put in the notes questioning Groot's divinity. And I think Groot's an interesting character because... Obviously, the side effect of, you know, pulling all the jokes about his immaturity and, you know, teenage mm-hmm. years and stuff, putting that aside, he does seem to be somewhat immortal because, I mean, he basically gave his life in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. He gives his life to save the friends, right? And they plant him and he regrows and he goes through adolescence and, you know, teenage years and all that. And then he... has a moment where he pulls back that whole understanding of who he's supposed to be, you know,
He steps forward and sacrifices.
He fights
some
again.
Of himself.
Yeah, some of himself, and then he actually fights in the final battle. So he grows up in the movie again, and So yeah, he's a very interesting character because he doesn't.
In the comics, he is a significantly more. Even though he always has the same line,
I am Groot.
He's a significantly deeper presence. You know how in the second Guardians of the Galaxy, Ego had that plant that he planted on all the worlds,
right.
and in the comics, and I may be going out into left field, but Groot's root system was much more. Groot was almost that tree. The tree that Odin references in the first Thor movie.
Hmm.
I think Groot really is closer to a divinity than any of the other characters that are not referred to as gods in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think he just is.
And yet he's one of the ones that's dusted at the end, which I find fascinating because technically he's a plant.
Yeah, why didn't any of the other plants go? Why didn't half the trees around them vanish?
So, once again, you can't think about it too deeply. It all falls apart.
I really hope that some of these questions that are put forward in like that pitch and that we're asking here, I hope they're already written into the script for the second one, that they're thrown out there to make us ask these questions. Mm-hmm. That would be very pleasant, and it wouldn't be the first movie that did that either.
Yeah, well, they've already filmed a good bit of it, haven't they? I mean, aren't they?
Oh, they must have.
Yeah, I think they filmed them back to back, so they're probably just in post-production at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much they can answer questions that are arisen from people seeing the first movie when the second movie is already filmed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see. Maybe they had. Yeah. Maybe they foresaw that we would be asking these questions. Maybe they wanted
see how
us.
Talented the writers are.
Maybe they wanted us to be asking these questions. A few random thoughts. I think there's things that just don't fit into any world discussion.
Yeah.
One of the ones I wanted to talk about was the fact that they unite against a common enemy. We have several schisms going on. Prior to Infinity War, we have Captain America and his group are technically criminals because they refuse to sign the peace accords. And we have Stark and his group not talking to them. And so, you know, Dr. Banner brings in the whole, it doesn't matter who you're not talking to. Thanos is coming. We need to unite, you know. And then there's the phrase, Sam talking to the leaders of the world or whoever they are. Telling them they're only criminals because that's what you choose to call them. So there's this division over petty differences that we have to come together against a common enemy. And I think that that's a good reminder from a political standpoint here in the United States is that the United States has a lot of infighting. We have a lot of factions that don't agree. But when we have a common enemy, we're all still Americans. And I think it behooves us to remember Beelzebub can be, there's Christian parallels to that too. I mean, different churches have different doctrinal stands that they argue about, but in the long run, death and Satan is our enemy and we should be uniting to save the world against them, you know? So
exactly.
There's lots of little ways that you can pull that parallel in is that no matter what our infighting is, no matter what our divisions are, we need to be able to unite against a common enemy.
We have to remember who the enemy
is. Yeah.
Both in questions of faith and in American politics. Folks.
Yeah. Come on. Let's quit fighting.
Yeah. We need our own Vision and Scarlet, our own Romeo and Juliet to pull everyone together.
Yeah. They are kind of a Romeo and Juliet, aren't they? We cannot have a Christian worldview podcast and not talk about the one point in the whole movie where Jesus' name.
And it wasn't used in vain. Yay!
It was a really cute line, actually. Doctor Strange and Stark and Spider-Man have created a trap that they're hoping will catch Thanos, and instead it catches the Guardians of the Galaxy. And there's this little fight that goes on, and Strange asks, what master do you serve? Because he's starting to figure out that maybe these are not Thanos' people.
Imagine that.
Peter Quill comes up with this really cute line. He says, what master do I serve? What am I supposed to say, Jesus?
That one was really out of the left field.
Yeah, it really was. And I guess, you know, coming from the fact that he is supposedly the half deity because his father mm-hmm. was a god.
Well, half celestial,
or however you want to put that.
Which, granted, is above the level of Thor on the power scale, yeah. but not yet a god. So I don't know.
But he doesn't have any power because he destroyed his source of power when he killed his father.
Yep.
So he doesn't have any godlike power anymore.
I thought it was interesting because, you know, when he was taken from Earth, he was a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So that seems really theologically deep for him to say, what am I supposed to say, Jesus?
Well,
it seems deep for a guy who hasn't been in a Christian environment since he was 10 and abducted by aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that may be Christianity was probably a little bit more front and center in that era that he was supposedly taken away from.
And the environment he was taken from,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So it not completely out of left field, but it was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was a nice nod.
Well, I think we've probably shared enough random thoughts. I'd really like to know what everybody else thought about the movie and if they see any other biblical theological stuff that mm-hmm. we missed. I'm sure we missed a ton because it's just, as you said before we started filming, it seems like we're missing something. Like there's something else there that we're just overlooking somehow.
Yeah, this one it's like it's like trying to hold those water filled balloons. You know,
it just keeps washing around in your hands.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's all going to firm up with the second movie too. Mm-hmm. The other half of Infinity War.
Yeah, whatever it's called.
I'm looking forward
when
to
they name it.
Getting to that one and saying here's what we meant.
Yeah, that means we're going to have to do an episode on it. You know.
Yeah, and you know what? Even if I am completely superheroed out or completely Star Wars'd out or completely Disney'd out, we will definitely do the second half of Infinity War.
As long as we're still here, Lord willing.
Yeah, God willing, exactly.
If you would like to give us feedback on this episode, which we really would like to hear, please join us in the discussion group on Facebook. You can find that by searching for Are You Just Watching? And look for the group. We're the only group out there called that, so you should be able to find us. Or you can, of course, go to our show notes at areyoujustwatching.com/81. Leave a comment there. You can leave us a voicemail at 903-231-2221, or you can email us feedback@areyoujustwatching.com. Be sure to please, 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 please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. That helps us out so much.
Yep. So there are so many ways to get the podcast, but iTunes is still the leader.
Yeah, it's still the leader. And we'd want you to share our podcast on Facebook and other social media, Twitter. Try to get the word out. If you like what we do, we need to grow our audience. So share us. Let other people know what we're doing. And to be honest, I hate asking for money, but our Patreon support has really kind of shrinking a little bit.
Mm.
We still have the same dedicated subscribers that we've had for a while, but it is shrinking, and we would dearly love to keep that support going. That helps us keep doing what we're doing, and we don't make money at this. It's a labor of love, but
yep.
We do have expenses, so we really would appreciate if just 5 people gave $5 a month. That would be amazing, you know. So we do want to give special thanks by name to Craig Hardy, Richard French, and Stephen Brown II, our very good supporters that have been giving over a year.
Thank you, folks.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate the gifts, and we'd really like more people to give. So go to our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/areyoujustwatching and consider giving us a small monthly gift. We actually know what we're going to record our next episode on. So don't know how many of you are familiar with a theatrical documentary that came out in 2016. It's called The Red Pill, and it is by Cassie J. And I stumbled upon it listening to some interviews on some Facebook media, never even heard about it. And I watched it more as a just a curiosity. And I really felt like this movie is missing a Christian worldview application. So Tim and I are going to discuss it in our next episode, and we may end up having enough material to do two episodes. I don't know. We'll see. And it's, I will strongly caution, since we typically don't do stuff that's rated R in this podcast, though we have occasionally stepped into the MA range.
Yeah.
The this movie contains some pretty horrific language.
Yeah, it's all
protests, filmed protests. Yeah.
Protesters yelling at each other.
And it's some of the worst language I think I've ever heard. So if you're easily offended by language, you might want to watch this with a filter if you watch it at all. Or you could just listen to what we have to say about it, because I'm pretty sure we'll cover most of the points when we talk about it. So tune in to our next episode, because it will be on the red pill. I don't know when it will be coming out, but it will be on the red pill. Until then, yep. I am Eve Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin.
And don't just watch. Are You Just Watching is a proud member of Noodle Mix Network. Subscribe to more of our podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodlemix.net.